What if I told you that earlier today, while you were just standing in line at the local coffee shop, the person casually brushing past you might have just cloned your physical debit card
Oh, yeah.
and like done it in exactly 12 seconds without ever even touching your wallet?
I mean, it sounds like a scene from some cyberpunk movie, right? But looking through the data we have today, it is a very active, very lucrative reality.
It really is. So, welcome to this custom deep dive crafted specifically for you. Today, we are wading through an absolute avalanche of tech news.
A massive avalanche.
Seriously, we have a stack of notes and sources from a massive May 3, 2026 Tech in Morning briefing. We're looking at six explosive stories covering everything from, invisible phone hacks to AI photo magic.
Yeah, but we aren't just here to read a list of headlines.
Right.
The real value is in seeing the broader picture. Because in isolation, these are just, six random tech updates. But underneath, there's a very clear, very concerning pattern.
Definitely. So our mission today is to uncover the invisible thread connecting all of this. We want to see how our relentless demand for digital convenience is creating these massive security blind spots.
Yeah, and how the explosion of AI is just fundamentally rewriting the rules of the hardware and software you use every single day.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the device that is probably, sitting within arm's reach of you right now, your smartphone.
Right, the ultimate tool of convenience, which has unfortunately become the ultimate tool of vulnerability.
Yeah, and we are looking at two specific vulnerabilities here that perfectly illustrate this illusion of safety. So first up, the briefing highlights this terrifying new malware called Engate.
Engate, yeah.
Now, I think we're all used to the idea of credit card skimmers, right? Those bulky plastic things criminals secretly stick over the card slot on gas pumps.
Right.
But Engate does away with the physical hardware entirely. It steals your bank card data through your phone's NFC near-field communication. So, I mean, how is a piece of software pulling off a physical card skim?
What's fascinating here is how it turns your own device into an unwitting relay station.
Wow.
Yeah. Near-field communication is basically a very short-range radio wave that your phone uses to talk to payment terminals. Criminals are actually weaponizing that broadcast feature.
So, how does it actually work?
Well, we are looking at a highly coordinated four-stage attack here. First comes the infection. You accidentally download the malware, maybe through a phishing link or some disguised app.
If it just hides.
Exactly. It sits quietly in the background. Then comes the capture phase. You are at a coffee shop. You tap your physical card near your infected phone, maybe pulling up a digital loyalty app or, making a legitimate mobile payment.
And the malware just reads that NFC radio wave as it passes by.
It intercepts it perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stage three is the transfer. The Engate malware instantly packages that captured NFC data and sends it over the internet to the attacker's device,
Wait, wherever they are.
wherever they happen to be in the world.
Oh my God.
And finally, we have exploitation. The attacker walks up to an ATM or a store, holds our own phone up to the reader, and the payment system just it thinks it's your physical card.
The speed of this is what totally blows my mind. The data in our briefing shows it takes just 12 seconds to copy the card data.
12 seconds.
And
Yeah.
because the scammers are making small, seemingly normal purchases, 87% of victims don't even notice it's happening until much later.
Right.
I mean, this has caused $24 million in global losses just in the first quarter of 2026 alone. That's a 345% growth.
It's wild.
Yeah.
But, the system is built entirely for seamlessness. The technology is designed to broadcast your financial info quickly and with zero friction.
Yeah.
Attackers aren't necessarily breaking complex cryptography here. They are just exploiting that lack of friction.
Yeah.
But the defense against this sophisticated global cyber heist is actually embarrassingly low tech.
Okay, please tell me we don't have to buy Faraday cages for our phones.
No. Just toggle NFC off in your phone's quick settings when you aren't actively standing at a register. You close the radio broadcast window and, well, you eliminate the risk.
That is wild. It really highlights how the features we love are the same ones leaving the door open. Which ties directly into the second mobile vulnerability, and this one comes from Apple.
Yes, the iOS bug.
Yeah, they rushed out a patch in iOS 17.4.2 because of a massive flaw in their notification services. The briefing states that deleted notifications like two-factor authentication codes or banking alerts were staying hidden on the device. But if I hit delete and it disappears from my screen, Where is the data actually going?
It isn't going anywhere.
Wait, really?
Yeah, when you delete a file or a notification on most modern operating systems, the computer doesn't actually spend the processing power to scrub that data from the physical memory immediately.
Oh, I see.
It simply deletes the shortcut, the digital pointer, that tells the screen where to find it. The system just marks that space as available to be overridden later.
So the data is still sitting there, perfectly intact. With the Apple bug, it's like throwing a highly sensitive bank statement into the trash can right under your desk, where anyone can just walk in, dig it out, and read it.
Exactly. Anyone with physical access or basic forensic tools could just pull it right up.
And with Endgate, it's like a digital pickpocket brushing past you in a crowd. Are we just sacrificing fundamental security for a split second of convenience?
I mean, yeah. We want the digital trash to magically disappear the second we hit delete, but we don't consider the back-end mechanics required to securely overwrite that memory.
Right.
We want the convenience of tapping to pay. But we ignore the fact that our phones are essentially shouting our financial data into the invisible radio waves around us.
So we as users are constantly told to patch these local holes in our personal devices, but we also inherently trust these massive software platforms to protect us when we go online. But our sources suggest that trust might be misplaced.
Oh, totally. The transition from hardware exploits to software ecosystem exploits is accelerating fast.
Let's look at Google Chrome and the Apple App Store. Google just had to drop an emergency patch for their first critical zero-day vulnerability of 2026. The briefing calls it a memory corruption vulnerability.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Before we get into the alarming stats here, what actually is a zero-day and how does memory corruption work?
Well, a zero-day simply means the hackers found the flaw and were actively exploiting it before the developers had even 0 days of warning to fix it.
So they're already inside before the alarm even goes off.
It's the cybersecurity worst-case scenario. As for memory corruption, think of your computer's memory like a massive hotel. Every application running your browser, your banking app, your email gets assigned its own secure room.
Okay, that makes sense.
A memory corruption vulnerability is when a hacker tricks the front desk into giving them the key to a room that is already occupied by something else, allowing them to peek at or alter the data inside.
And the trend here is moving in the wrong direction. Chrome zero days jumped from 8 in 2023 to 11 in 2024, to 14 in 2025. What is driving a 75% increase over 2 years for one of the biggest tech companies on the planet?
It is a direct reflection of software complexity. Browsers like Chrome aren't just displaying text anymore.
Right, they do everything now.
Exactly. They're integrating advanced web APIs, heavy graphic rendering, and massive new AI tools. The code base is becoming exponentially larger. And more code simply equals more potential points of failure for hackers to find.
But it's not just the browsers struggling to keep the walls up. Let's talk about the App Store. The briefing notes that 47 malicious crypto apps managed to infiltrate Apple's App Store.
47.
Yeah. They masqueraded as legitimate wallets like MetaMask, Trust Wallet, and Coinbase. And they managed to steal $18 million in Q1 2026 alone by capturing people's private recovery phrases.
It's incredible.
Here's where it gets really interesting. We're always told to only download from official stores. The App Store is supposed to be this pristine, secure, gated community. How do 47 burglars dressed in pixel-perfect MetaMask disguises just stroll past Apple's legendary security guards?
They get past the guards because they understand the mechanics of the automated security system.
What do you mean?
Well, Apple receives thousands of app submissions every single day. They cannot employ human engineers to manually review every single line of code. Instead, they use automated behavioral sandboxes. They boot the app up in an isolated environment for a few minutes to see if it tries to do anything malicious.
So the hackers just build apps that behave themselves during the test.
Precisely. It is a sleeper agent strategy. The fake app functions completely normally. The hackers flood the store listing with positive reviews from bot accounts to look legitimate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a user downloads it, enters their private crypto key, and the app does absolutely nothing. It waits days, sometimes weeks, before silently executing the code to drain the wallet.
So it completely evades the automated behavioral detection.
Exactly, because the detection is only looking for immediate threats upon installation.
And by the time the user realizes their wallet is empty, the damage is done. Why can't Google or Apple just hire more people or build better walls to stop this?
The economics heavily favor the attackers. On the black market, a reliable Chrome zero day goes for $200,000 to $500,000.
$500,000 for a bug.
Yeah. Google's bug bounty program is generous, paying up to $250,000 to independent researchers who find flaws, but they simply cannot outbid well-funded criminal syndicates or nation-states.
Right.
The walled garden's a total myth. The takeaway for anyone listening is that you cannot blindly trust a platform's reputation or a search bar result.
Yeah.
You have to go to the developer's official website and follow their specific, verified download link.
So, hackers are finding incredibly clever ways to steal millions of dollars by exploiting these platforms. But while that is happening, the tech giants themselves seem to be looking the other way because their resources have completely migrated to where the billions are. Let's look at the great AI pivot.
We are witnessing a seismic shift in how computing resources are allocated globally.
Yeah, I saw the NVIDIA Q1 2026 earnings report mentioned in the briefing, and I knew the AI boom was huge, but the numbers look absolutely absurd. What is actually happening with their revenue?
It is staggering. They pulled in $96 billion in total revenue. But the breakdown is what really matters here. 87% of that revenue came from their data center division,
which produces their enterprise AI chips.
Exactly. And only 9% came from gaming. To put that in context, just 2 years ago, data center was roughly 53%. The pivot away from the consumer has been extraordinarily fast.
And the consumer base is furious. For 25 years, NVIDIA built its empire on PC gamers. Now, their flagship consumer gaming GPU, the RTX 5090, is basically a ghost.
You can't find them anywhere.
Right. It retails for $1,599, but scalpers are selling them for $4,500 because NVIDIA just isn't manufacturing enough of them.
The manufacturing priority comes down to simple margin math. That RTX 5090 gaming card has a profit margin of about 40%.
Okay.
But the H100 AI chip they sell to enterprise data centers, that retails for $35,000 with a 70% profit margin.
Okay, playing devil's advocate here, if I'm NVIDIA's CFO, the math is a total no-brainer. One single H100 chip generates about $24,500 in pure profit.
Yeah.
You would have to sell 38 consumer RTX 5090s to make that same amount of money. Why bake 38 consumer cupcakes when one giant enterprise wedding cake makes the exact same profit and takes up the exact same space on the factory floor?
Right. It makes sense on paper.
But isn't alienating a 25-year loyal fan base an incredibly dangerous long-term bet?
It is a massive risk. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to understand why NVIDIA dominates the AI space so completely today. It's not just the physical silicon. It's a software moat they built called CUD.
Joe's UDA.
Yeah, it's a parallel computing platform that allows software to talk to the graphics card. For years, independent developers learned to code on CUD to squeeze better performance out of their gaming PCs.
So the people buying the gaming cards were actually the ones writing the foundation of the AI software.
Today's gamers are tomorrow's AI engineers. They learned the CDDA language because NVIDIA was the only real choice for high-end consumer hardware. But by abandoning the consumer market to chase short-term data center profits, NVIDIA is actively destroying its own grassroots pipeline.
And the data shows those users are already migrating. Gamers are flocking to AMD, buying the Radeon RX 8900 XT at $1,299, or even switching to Intel's Arc B770.
Yep.
And not because those cards are miles ahead in performance, but because they actually exist on store shelves.
And as those users migrate, the developers migrate with them. AMD is rapidly improving its own parallel computing platform called ROCm as a direct competitor to CUDA.
Oh, wow.
Intel is aggressively pushing its OneAPI platform, too. By forcing their most loyal, technically proficient user base into the arms of their competitors, NVIDIA is trading long-term brand loyalty and ecosystem dominance for immediate profits.
They just assume the AI train will never slow down.
They are operating under the assumption that the enterprise AI gold rush will never cool down.
History tells us gold rushes always cool down eventually. And when the dust settles, that grassroots consumer base might have already permanently moved out of NVIDIA's ecosystem. So NVIDIA is taking all this incredible AI processing power and locking it away in massive multi-million dollar enterprise data centers.
Yeah, out of reach for regular people.
But our final story today from the briefing is about a company taking the exact opposite approach.
Bringing the heavy AI processing directly to the phone in your pocket.
Yeah, Apple's upcoming iOS 27 release this fall features something they are calling visual intelligence. It is a complete reimagining of photo editing.
It's pretty impressive stuff.
We're talking smart object removal, where you tap a person on the background of your photo and they are erased and perfectly filled in just 0.8 seconds.
That's incredibly fast.
Or generative fill in 2.3 seconds, where you can literally extend the borders of a photo and the AI imagines what should be there.
The technical marvel here isn't just the speed of the AI, it is the physical architecture running it.
It is entirely on device and totally offline, but here is the catch.
There's always a catch.
Because this is a massive 3.2 gigabyte compressed AI model, it demands incredible power from Apple's specific neural engine hardware. So it only works on the A17 Pro chip or newer.
Right.
That means you need an iPhone 15 Pro, the iPhone 16 series, or an M2 iPad. If you are listening to this on an iPhone 14 right now, Apple is essentially telling you that your device isn't powerful enough to use these features.
Which stands in stark contrast to the architecture used by their competitors.
Yeah.
Google has Magic Eraser. Samsung has Generative Edit. Those features work on much older, much cheaper devices.
But they work by sending your photo out of your phone up to the cloud, processing it on a massive server, and sending it back.
Exactly.
It takes 3 to 7 seconds and obviously requires an internet connection. So what does this all mean? Apple is saying, we won't send your personal intimate photos to the cloud like the other guys do, but the entry fee for that privacy is buying a brand new, top-tier, $1,000 phone. Mm-hmm. Are we entering an era of a two-tier privacy system?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that is exactly the philosophical choice playing out in the hardware market. It is exactly a two-tier system. Apple is prioritizing speed and absolute privacy over accessibility.
Yeah.
When you process a photo on Google or Samsung's cloud, your data leaves your physical control. For many people, editing photos of their kids, their homes, or personal documents is a deeply private act.
Totally.
Apple is capitalizing on the discomfort of sending that data to a server farm.
But they are paywalling that peace of mind.
There's creating a luxury privacy market.
Oh.
It forces the consumer to ask themselves, what do you value more? The democratic accessibility of the cloud, where incredible AI tools are available to anyone with a basic smartphone and an internet connection.
Right.
Or the absolute verifiable privacy of local, immensely powerful hardware that you have to pay a steep premium to own.
It is a heavy question. And really, it brings us full circle to the overarching mission of today's deep dive. Think about the thematic journey we just went on, from having to dive into your phone settings to manually disable your NFC radio waves just to stop a digital pickpocket.
Yeah.
To having to act like a private investigator, verifying developer names on external websites to avoid losing your crypto in the App Store.
To navigating a fractured hardware market where enthusiasts have to migrate away from the dominant brand just to find a graphics card.
And finally, having to decide if you need to spend $1,000 upgrading your iPhone just to ensure your AI photo edits stay on your own device. The underlying current connecting all these stories is that the burden of navigating the digital age, the active responsibility for security, privacy, and access, is shifting entirely onto you, the user.
The tech companies are building the roads, but they're asking you to bring your own seatbelt. But this raises an important question, and it's actually something buried deep in the FAQ section of the briefing that we haven't touched on yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We've spent this entire deep dive stressing about highly sophisticated zero-day memory corruptions, complex NFC relay malware, and massive AI algorithms.
The high-tech boogeyman of 2026.
Exactly. But the security researchers who compiled this briefing note that the biggest risk to your digital life isn't actually your browser, and it isn't a vulnerability in your hardware.
Wait, really? What is it?
Simple phishing emails, weak reused passwords, and basic social engineering. They cause far more data breaches and financial losses than any zero-day exploit ever will. It makes you wonder, are we obsessing over the incredible complexity of the technology when the easiest system to hack is still simply human psychology?
Wow, that is the ultimate blind spot, isn't it? We obsess over whether the deadbolt has a memory corruption vulnerability, but we are still just handing the keys to anyone who sends an urgent-sounding email.
Pretty much, yeah.
So as you go about your day, check your settings, update your browser, but maybe double-check who you're really handing your keys to. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and thank you for joining us on this deep dive.